Time, dear friends, it surrounds us, defines us, dictates the rhythm of our lives. We measure it, chase it, and sometimes, if we're lucky, steal a little of it back. But what happens when time isn't a passive force? What happens when it pushes back? Tonight's tale begins in the quiet hum of a clockmaker's shop, a place where broken gears and forgotten hours find their second chance. But as you'll soon discover, not all clocks are made to tell time. Some are built to trap it, twist it, or, if you're not careful, bring it to a stop altogether. So, take a deep breath and listen closely. The gears are turning and the seconds are slipping away. Welcome to episode 187 of the Stop Go Stop podcast, A Thousand Promises. The shop is a labyrinth of timepieces. Every surface is covered in clocks, grandfather clocks, pocket watches, wall clocks, all ticking at different tempos. Shelves sag under the weight of mechanical innards, brass gears, springs, and tiny screws meticulously organized in jars. The air smells faintly of oil and varnish, mingling with the metallic tang of old machinery. Behind a wooden counter, Victor Hale, a wiry man in his late 50s with sharp features and wire-rimmed glasses, works intently. His hands move with precision, adjusting the tiny gears of an antique pocket watch under a magnifying loop strapped to his head. The dim glow of a desk lamp highlights his furrowed brow and steady hands. The doorbell jingles softly, signaling a customer. Victor doesn't look up.
Closed? We're closed.
I know, but you'll want to hear me out.
Look, I've got enough work as it is. If you've got something that needs fixing, come back tomorrow.
It's not a repair I need. It's a commission.
I don't do commissions. Repairs only.
You'll want to make an exception.
What is this?
It's a clock, and I need you to fix it.
This isn't like any clock I've ever seen.
That's because it's not just a clock, Mr. Hale. It's time itself, and it's running out.
Victor sits back in his chair, his eyes fixed on the strange clock in the wooden box. The irregular ticking fills the shop, unsettling and unnatural. The man in the black overcoat remains standing, his presence heavy, his shadow stretching unnaturally long across the room.
You're going to have to explain what you mean by time itself. And what does any of this have to do with me?
It's not just time that's running out, Mr. Hale. It's my sons.
Your sons?
Kellen and Jonas, my twin boys. They're 10 years old, or at least they were 10 the last time I saw them.
The last time? What are you talking about?
This clock. It's connected to them. It's their anchor, their tether to this world. Without it, they're slipping.
Slipping? Slipping where?
Into the spaces between seconds.
The spaces between seconds? Listen, I've heard my fair share of strange stories in this shop, but if you're trying to sell me a fantasy...
Do you think I'm here because I want to be? Do you think I'd carry this thing around if I had another choice? I'm not asking you to believe me, Mr. Hale. I'm asking you to help me. It started a year ago. The boys were inseparable, like reflections of each other. But then, they began to change. Kellen would pause mid-sentence as if he'd forgotten where he was. Jonas started having vivid dreams he swore weren't dreams at all. Places he'd been, things he'd seen that couldn't have happened.
Go on.
One day, I came home to find Kellen staring at this clock. It had just appeared in our house, sitting on the mantel. I swear to you, Mr. Hale, I'd never seen it before. But Kellen said it was theirs. That it had always been theirs.
And Jonas?
Jonas told me the clock wasn't just keeping time. It was holding it. He said it was keeping them in place, like an anchor keeps a ship from drifting away. Or was it a lighthouse making sure the ships don't hit the shore? I can't remember. But something's wrong with it now. Clock. The ticking. It's broken. Uneven. And so are they. Kellen disappears for hours at a time, right in front of my eyes, and Jonas, he's barely there anymore. It's like he's fading, becoming less real every day.
And you think fixing this clock will bring them back?
I don't just think it, I know it. This clock is their lifeline. If it stops working completely, I lose them forever.
I'll need time to study it. This isn't just gears and springs, it's something else entirely.
You'll feel it when you work on it. It doesn't just tell time, it remembers it. And be careful, Mr. Hale. The clock doesn't like to be tampered with.
Neither do I.
Don't let it take you with it, Victor.
Victor sits at his workbench, the strange clock before him. But instead of working on it directly, he turns to a nearby grandfather clock, his hands moving almost unconsciously across its polished wood surface. His expression is distant, as though he's speaking more to himself than to anyone else. The room is filled with the soft ticking of clocks, layered into a steady, rhythmic hum.
A grandfather clock is, in its way, a living thing. It breathes time. It measures it. But more than that, it holds it, like cupped hands catching water. Every piece, every part, has a purpose, a role to play in the delicate dance of keeping the hours steady. This is the heart, the pendulum. It swings back and forth, not because it wants to, but because it has to. Gravity pulls it down, and the clock's escapement nudges it forward again, keeping it in motion. Made of brass, usually, heavy enough to resist air's touch, but light enough to obey the call of the gears. Without it, the whole thing loses its rhythm. Then there's the face. The dial. It's what we see, what we trust. Enamel or painted metal, sometimes silvered brass on the finer ones. The hands move across it, marking hours, minutes, seconds. But the face is a liar. It tells you time is simple, linear, something you can read at a glance. It doesn't show you the chaos beneath. Here's where the truth lives, the movement. Gears, wheels, arbors, springs, all made of brass or steel, precision machine, their teeth interlocking like a thousand tiny promises. There's the great wheel, driving the whole mechanism, and the smaller ones passing the force along. You've got the escapement, a delicate piece of engineering that controls the release of energy, turning raw power into measured motion. These are the weights. Lead, sometimes cast iron, encased in brass for show. They're heavy, and they have to be. They provide the energy that drives the whole system. Wind them too tightly, and they'll snap the mechanism. Let them run down, and the clock stops, like a heart with no blood to pump. And here, this is the mainspring. Coiled steel, a reservoir of tension. When you wind the clock, you store energy here, like compressing a breath you'll let out slowly over time. It's all so delicate, so precise. And yet, it's resilient. It can last for centuries if you take care of it, if you respect it. A grandfather clock is more than wood and brass and steel. It's a partnership between forces, gravity, tension, friction, and time itself. A fragile truce held together by balance. But this isn't a truce. It's something else. It doesn't measure time. It consumes it. It twists it, bends it, holds it hostage. And if I don't figure out how to fix it, it's not just this clock that's going to stop.
An hour later, across town. The coffee shop is warm with soft lighting and the low hum of conversation. The smell of freshly brewed coffee mingles with the faint sweetness of pastries. The man in the black overcoat sits at a corner table by the window. Across from him sits a woman in her mid-40s, sharp-eyed and poised, wearing a navy scarf that seems to shimmer faintly in the light. She stirs her coffee absently, her gaze fixed on him.
You don't strike me as someone who believes in certainty. So tell me, how do you know what you know about the future?
I don't. Not in the way most people would think.
Then how?
I see patterns, threads in the fabric. They're faint, but if you know where to look, you can trace them. Moments that echo forward. A word spoken here that shapes a decision there.
Butterfly wings. Cause and effect.
Exactly. But it's more than that. Sometimes it's as if the future leaves its shadow behind, like a footprint before the step is taken.
And you've learned to read these shadows?
I didn't learn. I was shown.
shown by who?
Not who, what?
The clock.
It doesn't just hold time. It bends it, pulls pieces of it forward, pushes others back. When I'm near it, it's like glimpsing reflections in a cracked mirror. Fractured, incomplete, but enough to make sense of what's coming.
And what is coming?
A choice. One I'm not ready to make.
The future isn't kind to those who hesitate.
You sound like you've seen it too.
In my own way, dreams mostly, but they don't feel like dreams. They feel planted, like someone dropped them into my mind while I was asleep.
What do you see?
Fragments. A room filled with clocks, all stopped. A child's voice calling out from somewhere I can't find. And fire, always fire, burning everything down to ash.
That's not a dream, that's a warning.
I thought you didn't believe in certainty.
Some things you don't need certainty to understand.
Well, if the future's coming no matter what, we might as well meet it with full stomachs.
You're not wrong.
Two coffees and a slice of apple pie each.
Each?
If the world's going to burn, I'm not sharing dessert. You know, this all reminds me of something I read once. How we can never truly see the connection, only the sequence. One thing, then the other. But we tie them together, because it's what we need to make sense of the world. We don't know one ball makes the other move. We just expect it to.
And yet it happens every time.
Maybe that's why I can't stop thinking about this poem.
What poem?
It goes like this. One ball strikes, the other rolls. A whisper through the air. Did the strike command the roll? Or did we place it there? A match alights, the candle burns, flame dances on the wick. Do we believe the fire learns, or is the pattern trick? A child laughs, the echo fades, the future takes its shape. But is the sound a thread we weave, or just the loom's escape? Cause and effect, a phantom string, a bond we cannot see. Yet in its shadow, time takes wing and binds both you and me.
That's not a poem, that's something else. Something closer.
Maybe, or maybe it's just what happens when you stare too long at the threads. You start to see patterns that might not even be there.
But what if they are there?
Steel arbors, brass gears. But this one. This one's different. What are you hiding in there? You lost?
Not at all. I came to see you.
Why?
He told me you'd be working on it. Said you might need perspective.
You mean the man in the overcoat?
We've both spoken to him, though I don't think either of us can say we truly understand him.
And you're here to help me understand him?
I'm here because I've seen what happens when people tinker with things they don't fully grasp.
This isn't tinkering. This is precision.
Is it? Or is it improvisation disguised as control? He said it's connected to his sons.
That's what he said.
And you believe him?
I don't know, but this clock, it's not like anything I've seen before. It's not just mechanics. It's
alive.
You feel it too?
I've felt it since I walked in here. It's like it's watching us, waiting for something.
That's new.
It's not just marking time. It's reacting to us.
Then the question is, what does it want? Don't touch it.
I'm not going to. It's endless.
Endless?
Whatever's inside this clock, it's not just time. It's all time. Every moment, every possibility, coiled up like a spring waiting to snap.
Then we need to figure out how to wind it back before it snaps for good. You know, time's not what we think it is. Not a river, not a line. It's threads. Woven, tangled, stretched thin in some places, knotted in others. And this clock. It doesn't just measure the threads. It's part of the loom.
You think it's weaving something?
Or unraveling it. Time is a string pulled taut by force, curved by gravity's silent course. A thread of light through the fabric bends, yet never breaks, though it twists and ends. A web of moments, vast, unseen, entangled echoes and fields between. Each second sings in a vibrating wave, a fleeting tremor we cannot save. Past and future, they intertwine, braided loops through the space-time line. Not fixed, but flowing, elastic, vast, each stitch a whisper of moments past. Yet touch the thread and the pattern phrase, a single pluck shifts nights and days. For time is fragile, though infinite seems, a fabric torn in the space of dreams.
Did you write that?
No, writing is the wrong word. Waiting, like it's been waiting.
Waiting for what?
For someone to listen.
Clocks are more than tools of order. They are the rhythm keepers of progress. From the first tick of a mechanical escapement to the precise oscillations of atomic timepieces, clocks have been humanity's compass in our cosmic exploration. Without them, spaceflight would have been an impossible dream, a myth confined to science fiction. In 1957, when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik 1, a simple onboard quartz clock allowed the satellite to transmit regular radio pulses back to Earth, a heartbeat that marked humanity's first true step beyond the atmosphere. The timing of those signals was critical, a way to track its orbit and calibrate future missions. It was primitive by today's standards, but it worked, and it inspired more. The Apollo program relied on something far more sophisticated, the precision of mechanical chronometers and onboard computers synchronized to Earth-based atomic clocks. Without these, the navigation systems guiding the spacecraft would have faltered. When Armstrong and Aldrin stepped onto the moon in 1969, they wore Omega Speedmasters, wristwatches tested in vacuum chambers, and subjected to extreme conditions. These were no ordinary timepieces, they were lifelines. By the time probes like Voyager and Pioneer left Earth's orbit, clocks had become even more important. Atomic clocks aboard spacecraft ensured that signals sent across billions of miles could be precisely timed. This was key not just for navigation, but for understanding the universe itself. Timing the delay of radio waves bouncing back from far-off planets to measure their distance, velocity, and composition. And in today's age of interstellar ambition, timekeeping has reached new heights. GPS satellites, the foundation of modern navigation, rely on cesium and rubidium atomic clocks accurate to billionths of a second. Without these, their signals would drift, and entire systems, communication networks, international banking, even the timing of this very recording would crumble. But there's something about this clock, isn't there? Something older, deeper. As though it holds not just the future, but the past. All the threads of time that have ever been measured. It's not just a tool, it's a question. And as we've learned from the history of clocks in space, questions about time are never simple. To be continued? That's how time seems to work. It is always to be continued. Ah, time. Always so much, and yet never enough.
Who are you?
Who am I? I am a traveler, much like you. Though I must admit I did not expect to find myself here. This clock, it called to me.
Called to you?
Yes. It hums with a resonance I once tried to capture in equations, a resonance that kept me awake many nights, scribbling on scraps of paper and staring at the stars.
You're talking about relativity?
Indeed. The theory that came to define my life. But you see, it was never simple. Everyone assumes it sprang from my mind fully formed, like Athena from the head of Zeus. But in truth, it was a labyrinth, a path filled with dead ends, wrong turns, and doubt so deep, I nearly abandoned it entirely.
What stopped you?
Curiosity. And the strange, stubborn belief that the universe wanted to reveal its secrets. I remember one night in 1905, I was working late in my small apartment in Bern. My wife and son were asleep, and the city outside was silent. I had been thinking about time for weeks, months, really, about how it stretches and bends under the weight of motion and gravity. But the pieces wouldn't fit. It was as though I were trying to solve a puzzle without knowing what picture I was trying to assemble.
What changed?
A thought. Simple, yet profound. I imagined myself riding on a beam of light, racing through the universe at unimaginable speed. And as I rode, I looked around and realized time itself was not a constant. It was elastic, malleable, bound to the observer's perspective. But even then, I doubted. I worried I was chasing shadows, seeing patterns where none existed. I had to test, retest, and test again. The mathematics became my anchor, though it often felt like a storm pulling me under.
And when you finished?
When I finished, I realized I had not ended anything. I had merely opened a door to questions even larger than the ones I started with. This clock, it feels like one of those questions, a puzzle whose picture we cannot yet see.
Do you think it's dangerous?
All knowledge is dangerous, but that does not mean we should fear it, only respect it. The hum of the clock grows louder, should we fear that? And the swirling face brightens. Time, my friends, is not a straight line. It is a dance, a tangled, intricate dance. And this clock, it knows the steps better than I ever could. The dim light of dawn filters through the grimy windows, painting the workshop in muted gold and gray. The strange clock hums faintly, its swirling face casting eerie patterns across the walls. The clockmaker stands by his workbench, staring at the clock with an intensity that borders on desperation. The visitor watches him from across the room, her arms crossed tightly, as though bracing herself.
I need to get to work.
Work? On what?
On this, whatever this is.
Victor, you're talking like this is normal, like it's just another job. A strange clock shows up, hums like it's alive. A strange man waltzes in and tells us it's bending time. And you're fine with this?
I'm not fine with it, but it's here, and I'm here, and I can't afford to question what my mind is doing right now. Maybe this is a dream. Maybe I'm losing it. But either way, I have to see it through.
Why?
Because if I don't, no one else will. And if there's even a chance that clock is connected to those twin boys, then I owe it to them to try. I don't know what you want from me, or why you're here. But if you've got something to say, now's the time.
Victor, who are you talking to?
Kellen. Jonas. If you're there, if you can hear me, say something. Hey, please, just give me a sign.
Victor, stop. You don't know what you're doing. What was that?
It's them. Kellen. Jonas.
Victor, what did you just do?
I didn't do anything. They're trying to reach us. Kellen? Jonas? Is that really you?
This isn't possible. What's happening? What are you seeing?
It's not just showing us time, it's playing it back, like a loop. Those two, Kellen and Jonas, they're not here, not now. They're in the future.
How far in the future?
They're leaving messages for each other.
They're using the clock to communicate. The messages, they're bouncing off it somehow, like echoes trapped in time. But why? What's happening to them? Victor, what does that mean? What's it doing to them?
If the clock is resonating with the station, it might be destabilizing it, altering it at a fundamental level.
You're saying it's tearing their station apart?
I don't know. But I didn't build this thing to destroy. It was supposed to measure time, not manipulate it. I can't stop it. I don't even know how it's doing this.
Victor, you have to try. If the clock is connected to their stations, you might be the only one who can sever the link before it destroys them.
But what if severing the link strands them? What if they need it to survive?
And what if keeping it connected kills them?
What's already here?
Kellen.
Empty space? Gas clouds?
Jonas.
A few glowing jellyfish?
I hope you know what you're doing.
And yet, they've survived here longer than we have.
The point was to build something that lasts, Jonas. Not just a machine, but something that respects what's already here.
We're supposed to be a team. You, me, the others.
Maybe chaos.
We're supposed to be a team.
We're supposed to be a team.
Me, the others.
You,
did you ever
me,
think of
the
that?
Others.
Did you ever think
that
of that?
That the galaxy doesn't need
that
us to tame it?
The galaxy doesn't need us to tame it?
The workshop is quiet, bathed in the pale light of a late afternoon sun filtering through the dusty windows. Victor sits slumped at his workbench, his tools scattered haphazardly, his eyes locked on the swirling face of the mysterious clock. The hum has dulled to a low, rhythmic pulse, almost like a heartbeat. The bell above the workshop's door jingles softly. Victor looks up to see an older man step inside, his face lined with worry and exhaustion. He hesitates in the doorway, his hands twisting a hat nervously.
You're the clockmaker?
Yes. That's right.
I came about the clock. The one I brought in a few days ago.
You're the father.
Yes, Kellen and Jonas, they're my boys.
It's been active since I started working on it.
Active? What do you mean?
Your sons, they're using it. Somehow they've been sending messages through it. Messages from the future.
That's not possible.
It shouldn't be. But it is. They're alive 30 years from now on distant space stations. They've been trying to communicate with each other, and now with us.
You've heard them?
I've heard their voices. But it's more than that. The clock isn't just a transmitter. It's affecting their stations. Changing them.
Changing them? How?
I don't know exactly, but the resonance of the clock. It's rewriting the structures around them. It's dangerous.
Are they in danger?
I don't know.
The clock lets out one final chime, resonating deeply before falling silent. The glow of its face dims until only the faintest shimmer remains, like an ember in the dark. Victor and the man sit in the clock shop. And so the story ends, though it was never meant to be tidy. Loose ends dangle, threads twisting through the fabric of time, connecting moments we can barely comprehend. A father waits, a clockmaker wonders, and somewhere, perhaps not far, perhaps forever distant, two brothers speak to each other through the echo of a machine built for no clear purpose. The seconds slip like grains of sand. A current flows beneath your hand. No start, no end, the clock's refrain. A circle drawn in endless chain. You move to chase it, step in line. Yet time's a trick, a vast design. It winds and twists, a fleeting stream. Reality bends, a waking dream. And though it spins, we cannot stay. The wheel turns on, both night and day. You reach to grasp, it slips, it soars, a wave that breaks on distant shores. But in its pull, a song we find, a fleeting echo, heart aligned. So, my friends, I ask you, what will you do when the cup is placed before you? Will you let it sit, growing cold and stale, while you wrestle with the weight of what it might mean? Or will you lift it to your lips, take a chance, and decide for yourself what it tastes like? Because life, real life, isn't found in the questions. It's found in the sipping. Here's to the swirl of cream and the bitter warmth of the unknown. Here's to stepping forward one sip at a time. And here's to you, my fellow travelers. May your coffee always be strong and your choices bold. You have been listening to episode 187, A Thousand Tiny Promises. The Stop Go Stop podcast is produced by John Wanzel. From Chicago to your ears, thank you for listening.